Welcome back to another episode of Peaceful Home Birth. One thing I hear so often from women who have had a baby before is, I wish I would have taken more time to prepare for the postpartum time. Well, today I'm going to help you do that by bringing on a special guest that knows all about breastfeeding. But first, a special reminder to those of you interested in joining a women's circle. If you're looking to connect with other women who believe birth is a supernatural and perfectly designed event, or hearing other stories from women who have had positive experiences, maybe you're wanting to learn some pitfalls to avoid when preparing for a peaceful home birth, and even create space and time to dream about your birth, then make sure you click the link in the show notes below to save your spot. Just this past Monday, we had an in-person women's circle. My dear friend Jamie, who has been on the show a few times now, and I hosted, and it was magical to say the least. I have so much more to say about that, and that will probably be in an episode coming up soon. But this is a virtual one, and so I just find that connection is so important for women. So if you are looking for that, please make sure you come. Last virtual event was so great, and so we'd love to see you there. Also, before I introduce my guest, I have been absolutely loving these birth strategy sessions that I'm having with all of you. So many of you are looking just to connect with somebody who's been there before and get your questions answered. Maybe you're a first-time home birth mom and you're like, I have no idea where to start. I have all the questions in the world. I just need to ask somebody about it, right? Maybe you've had a traumatic experience in the past and you don't see a way forward. You don't see how it could be possible to have a home birth. And you just want confirmation that the dream of home birth on your heart is actually one that the Lord is leading you to. Just as a reminder, it's completely free. It's a no strings attached call. We're just going to pop on Zoom for 30 minutes and we're going to create this strategy together to overcome fear, anxiety, and help you prepare for a peaceful home birth. So I have a limited number of spots available because this is a first come, first serve, so they will go fast. I just want to make sure you grab your spot. So click the link in the bio or go to bit.ly/birth strategy, book your coaching session today. All right, now to introduce my guest, Therese Dansby. She is a wife, homeschooling mom of three, a nurse, a postpartum doula, lactation consultant, and podcast host. She really does it all. She lives in a small town outside of Omaha, Nebraska, and she has developed a passion for the tenderness of the postpartum period, and through her work, she aims to educate women about breastfeeding and postpartum while they're still pregnant so that they feel more prepared for the transition from maiden to mother. It was so great to glean all of this knowledge from Teresa, and I just know you're going to love this episode too. So let's get into the show. Welcome to the Peaceful Home Birth Podcast, where your journey to a joyful and empowered birth experience begins. I'm your host, Allie McLean, a registered nurse, home birth coach, devoted wife, and proud mother to four incredible kiddos. I've walked the path from trauma to triumph, and I'm here to guide you every step of the way. At the Peaceful Home Birth Podcast, we're more than just a show. We're a community of dreamers, believers, and fearless mothers to be. If you're seeking to reclaim your birth story, to transform fear into confidence, and to embrace the beauty of home birth, you found your tribe. My own transformative journey began with a traumatic C-section, propelling me on a quest to uncover the power of home birth. And now I'm on a mission to help you rise above your past, prevent needless C-sections, and stand firmly in the certainty of your dream birth. As a devoted follower of Jesus, I believe that his divine design for birth is inherently good. It is a reflection of his love, strength, and grace. If the dream of home birth has been planted on your heart, know that it's there for a purpose, and I'm here to stand with you as you pursue it wholeheartedly. In a world filled with racing thoughts and doubts, I'm your guide to taking those thoughts captive, making them obedient to Christ, and replacing them with the liberating truth. Together, we'll navigate the challenges that lie ahead, finding not only freedom, but also unbridled joy on your path to motherhood. This podcast is a haven for the woman who has faced the darkness of a traumatic birth and has questioned whether home birth is within her reach. Here we shatter those doubts. Join us for illuminating interviews with remarkable birth workers who share our reverence for the sanctity and splendor of birth. Listen to inspiring women as they recount their triumphant birth stories, each a testament to the strength that resides within you. So whether you're just starting to explore the world of home birth, or you're already on this radiant journey, the Peaceful Homebirth Podcast is your sanctuary, your wellspring of knowledge, and your unwavering support system. Get ready to be inspired, to be empowered, and to embark on a path that leads you to the birth you've always dreamed of. It's time to experience the Holy Spirit's power, to embrace the beauty of birth, and to create a legacy of love and strength. Are you ready to transform your birth experience? Let's dive in. Hi, Therese. Welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on today to share your heart on all things breastfeeding and postpartum. So this is going to be a really great conversation. And would you just take a couple of minutes to explain more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. My name is Therese. I have been married for almost 15 years, if I can do the math. And we have three kiddos. My oldest is 8, about to turn 9. And then I have a 5-year-old who's about to turn 6 and a 1-year-old. And I started my career like you as a nurse in the hospital. I was a NICU nurse from 2007 through 2015. And I had my first baby in 2014. And through everything that entailed, I made a little career shift from nurse to lactation consultant. And I worked in the hospital for a few years doing that. And then I started doing private practice.
That's awesome. I know the value of lactation consultants for sure. And you're an IBCLC, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Went all the way.
Yes. That's amazing. I remember with my first, having a lactation consultant come in the hospital, and it was just not helpful, but meeting with an IBCLC like changed my world. So would you go in and just explain the kind of the difference between an LC and an IBCLC?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are multiple levels of breastfeeding support, and they all have their own values. So obviously, maybe the first level is your friends and family that have breastfed. That's a valuable experience. It's hopefully supportive and encouraging. And the next step would maybe be some level of peer support where somebody, again, encouraging, supportive, maybe not officially licensed. And then there are various levels of licensure. So there can be a CLC, which is a certified lactation counselor. There are breastfeeding educators. There are like clinical breastfeeding specialists. There are a lot of acronyms. And then kind of the gold standard, as they call it, is International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. And it's pretty intense. There are three pathways to get there. And the one I did was 1,000 hours of direct work with moms and babies feeding. And it's supervised work by other lactation consultants. So it's essentially an apprenticeship. And I learned a ton from my mentors. And then you have to do 90 classroom hours of lactation specific, which is a lot of talk about breastfeeding, which I loved. And then you have to take a board exam. So that's what I do now.
Yeah, experience is so valuable, and especially when you are apprenticing under other, you know, most of them women who have that. It's just so amazing to get to do that. So would you kind of talk about what you do now, what your care looks like for women who are looking into hiring an IBCLC?
Yeah, so right now I do home visits, and I live outside of Omaha, so Omaha area, Washington County, and I can do virtual visits as well, which is nice because my licensure is international. So I've not really done that international yet, but I've had some clients in Canada and various states. It's international.
Yeah.
And so help them with breastfeeding wherever they're at. Painful latch, nipple damage, baby not gaining weight. You know, a huge variety. I've helped moms walk through weaning, food allergies, through breast milk, just a wide variety of issues. When you think you've seen it all, something else comes up.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Well, would you tell us a little bit about your story? Why are you so interested in breastfeeding in the first place? What? Did it start with your first kid or after that?
Yeah. It started before that. I worked in the NICU and there was a feeding team. So it was a speech therapist and an occupational therapist and a lactation consultant who would go around to every baby. And I was just really fascinated with what they did, because especially premature babies or sick babies maybe don't necessarily have those instincts and reflexes and, you know, quick desire to latch onto the breast. And so there was a lot of work involved, and kind of the clinical part of my brain really liked that. And then of course, once I had my own baby, it brought in that nurturing connection, like motherhood empowerment kind of aspect to it as well.
Yeah. And that really is a really important part of the whole breastfeeding journey for sure. Just with all of the hormones involved and how beneficial it can be for mom, to have that relationship. Would you speak on a little bit of that importance of the mother bonding and her kind of journey into that, and how breastfeeding can really help facilitate that?
Yeah, so we know that oxytocin is one of the hormones that causes contractions and labor, and oxytocin is also a bonding hormone, and so skin to skin can facilitate that. So ideally, baby's born, we put them skin to skin, and there's more oxytocin, there's more cramping down, getting that bleeding to stop, and there's bonding. And then when the baby latches, they start sucking, it stimulates oxytocin again. So then every time they nurse, you have another wave of oxytocin, which is another wave of bonding, also another wave of that uterus cramping down. So moms will be like, why am I cramping every time I nurse? And that's just nature's way of getting your uterus back to its normal size quicker. So it's just so intermingled, the physiological aspects and the emotional aspects. And so in a perfect world, it's a positive feedback loop, right? The baby nurses, you love them so much, you nurse them more, you love them more, and everybody's just warm and cozy and happy. And if there's any sort of disruption to that, it's very shocking to mom, honestly, if she was expecting it to work well and planning on it working well. And moms who really want to breastfeed and have any sort of difficulty with it are at a much higher risk for postpartum mood disorders, because A, it's just a major disappointment. It's a change in plans. It's increased stress, potentially a financial burden. And it's having the opposite effect. You put your baby to the breast and you're like stressed. Are they getting enough, or this hurts, or anything that's interrupting that ideal cycle?
Yeah, I remember with my first, like you were saying, we just don't expect it to like be hard. And it's a very natural thing. So we just think, oh, it's going to come very naturally. And a lot of women just aren't having the support from friends, families, and peers. And so that's why lactation consultants are becoming more and more, you know, in demand, because we just don't have that community aspect of education anymore. But I remember with my first thinking, one more day, one more day. I just need one more day. And I did that every day, told myself that for about 3 months before it finally got better. And I finally found help that was like encouraging. So, but part of my story is I had a very traumatic birth experience before that. And so I mean, when she was pulled out, I had a C-section. I didn't even know, like, I very much dissociated. I didn't know if she was my baby. I kind of thought I was having a boy. It was a girl. And so I was just like, you know, it was so discombobulating. I could not get my feet underneath. And then that breastfeeding relationship was just so hard. So of course, the postpartum depression, it was just a cycle that happened. But I'm wondering, do you see any correlation between rough births and difficult nursing relationships?
Yes, the short answer is yes. The long answer is really long. There are factors just simply between mom and baby, like you're saying, C-section or potentially things like a planned C-section or an induction or things where your body just wasn't even starting that cascade of hormones on their own. Yes, there is a little bit of a dissociation. There's a bit of a learning curve. There are a lot more things that can complicate it too. If baby was in a weird position for a long time at the end of pregnancy or in the birth canal for a long time, a lot of things can affect their head shape, the cardinal movements of birth, the tension in their neck and upper back and jaw. And these are things that are so hard to explain to somebody who doesn't have that bigger picture because, like, why would pushing for 3 hours affect breastfeeding? But it almost always does. And obviously those things are not insurmountable, but they do add up. And things like a lot of blood loss, even things like retained placenta can be a really sneaky one where mom's milk just doesn't come in all the way. And there can be a lot of factors, which is why it's helpful to have sometimes a professional come in because it's great to have family and friends cheering you on, but there's a lot of weird things that can happen. And the sooner we get to the root of them, the better.
So true. Yeah, that encouragement is such a big factor, and that can really help a mom just keep going even when times get really tough. But like you're saying, there are just so many factors, and that makes me think too, like the collaborative team approach to surround a mom is so important, because in those cases of, the head in a wonky position, pushing for 3 hours, that type of thing would be a very good time to call in a chiropractor or a myofunctional therapist, which can also help with nursing, along with, okay, let's have this lactation consultant come in and really help mom figure out how to hold the baby properly for that. And how have you seen that collaborative team approach in your practice?
Yeah, I love that reminder. I definitely don't want to sound like the lactation consultant has to swoop in and fix everything because that's really not
No.
it. I often do say I'm only as good as my next referral. And one of my roles is almost as a case manager for those really complex things. Like here is your here are these referrals for body work. And maybe you do need to go see a dentist to consider oral ties, or maybe you need to go to your midwife or OB and ask them about a retained placenta. And that is that's one of the harder aspects of my roles is really kind of thinking about all the moving pieces and bringing them into the mom's awareness if it's applicable.
Yeah, that is powerful, connecting, and that's a huge aspect of what you do. So that really does matter. Can you talk about some worries that maybe most moms might have? And when is a good time to call a lactation consultant? I know there we can get kind of caught in the trap of, oh, I don't think I'm producing enough milk. That's one that I hear all the time, and I always ask, well, why do you think that? But I'm kind of curious on your take on maybe moms weighing babies at home and getting worried that they're not producing enough milk and that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common one when I'm teaching classes prenatally that moms are asking, my sister didn't produce enough milk. Does that mean I'm going to have trouble? Or they're saying, a lot of times it's my sister. My sister had cracked and bleeding
Oh.
nipples. I didn't want to keep breastfeeding. Am I going to have that? Those are probably the most common questions that I get prenatally because those are being talked about more, which is good. And I think those social media, I really encourage moms to like stay off social media for 8 weeks postpartum, unless you're very specifically asking, like, who is a good body worker, who is a good lactation consultant, because you don't need to see pictures of what so and so pumped. You don't need to,
Good point.
I mean, just the comparison is rampant on social media, even if you're not going into it looking for those kinds of things. You and I follow a million birth
Yeah.
type people, and
We see
somebody's
it
always
all
going to
on
be
there.
Somebody's always going to be posting their pumping pictures or something. And that is a really common one. So same like you, like what makes you think that you're not producing enough milk? And let's really talk about this. A lot of questions too on social media are like, what can I eat? What can I drink to get my supply up? And I'm like, if you really have a supply issue, there's a lot more at play. So,
How many people do you think they have a supply issue but really don't?
That's a good question. And I was there, and I never want to be like, people don't know what's going on, because this was me with my first. I was a breastfeeding educator and a NICU nurse, and I brought my first baby home. And I was like, you guys are just letting me take this baby home from the hospital?
Oh my
like,
gosh,
not,
yes. The anxiety is real.
It was so, I was like, am I even qualified to do this? And he, of course, in hindsight, had a posterior tongue tie and a whole bunch of stuff going on. But at the time, all I could do was check the boxes. I was like, okay, I fed him 8 times in 24 hours. Okay, he had the bare minimum wet and dirty diapers, and but he wasn't gaining the weight. And so then it did send me to this place of, oh my gosh, low milk supply. You know what? When he was a baby, like blue Gatorade was a thing. It was like kind of like Body Armor maybe is now. People are like, oh, I swear, like this thing and that thing and these magical things. And when he was one, I started my formal training and becoming a lactation consultant. And I'm like, why didn't anyone just tell me to like calm down, take a step back, and call someone for help, get off of Facebook? I've been there, which is why I have empathy for people who are there now, because it's very easy to wonder, my baby's not gaining weight, oh, it must be my fault, I must not have enough milk. Whereas oftentimes, maybe baby's not transferring enough, maybe baby's not stimulating your milk supply. You know what I mean? We're so quick to blame ourselves. And
yes,
there's a lot going on. So in terms of the perceived low milk supply, oh gosh, if you're going off of clients who call me, probably most of them who are actually scheduling an appointment actually have a supply issue by that point. But if you're looking at Facebook posts, probably like at least 50% of them don't actually have a low supply.
Yeah. Well, the comparison trap is very real. You're so right on that. And that's a very dangerous thing to get in, especially immediately postpartum when you're in the thick of, you know, that hormone crash, and you already think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be a good mother. I mean, even with my fourth, I remember sitting in bed looking at him being like, what if I'm not a good mom to him? And and then you start getting all of these thoughts and anxiety, and it just takes you down such a crazy rabbit hole that probably isn't helpful most of the time.
Yeah.
Would you give us a little education on how much milk is normal for a newborn to have? And does it increase over time with breastfeeding? How does that work? Because I know a lot of people kind of think, well, I'm pumping so much milk, and so I want to, but it stayed the same. Like, I'm still giving my baby 2 ounces and they're 6 months old, you know? So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in general, it's a gradual increase from birth until 6 to 12 weeks. And then that's, for most people, that's when their supply kind of maxes out. And then it starts to normalize. So shortly after birth, the milk production process becomes a supply and demand thing. So you remove milk, your breast replaces it, and that's how you determine your milk supply. So, so women will start, most women will just start with colostrum. They probably won't be leaking. They probably won't feel super full in terms of breast fullness and milk engorgement the day of delivery. We are going by latch. Is it comfortable? Is baby actively sucking? Maybe we hear occasional swallows. We want to be watching wet and dirty diapers. So the wet and dirty diapers increase throughout that first week, and your milk supply increases throughout that first week too. So the first day, it might be like half a teaspoon or a teaspoon of milk per feeding, of colostrum, like the thick yellow kind of gel-like milk that has very different nutritional and immune properties. And over the first 2 weeks, it becomes more plentiful, but it still acts a lot like colostrum. It's more yellow, but it gets more and more plentiful. And then somewhere around that point, if somebody was pumping, nobody necessarily needs to pump for no reason in the first 2 weeks, but if you've been pumping, you might notice that your milk is getting less yellow at that point and more white. It's just becoming more mature milk. It continues to become more plentiful till about 6 weeks, and then hopefully then it levels out. So sometimes I'll get moms like, oh, I think my supply dropped. And usually it's just they're not feeling so engorged because their milk supply is appropriate for
Yes.
what their baby's taking.
Okay, and now it's time to share one of my sponsors with you. After my first birth, which ended in a traumatic C-section, I started researching literally everything, including things that go in and on me and my family's body. I started getting rid of everything, first starting with cleaning products and then over-the-counter meds. But makeup has been the hardest thing for me to replace. It seems as all the natural makeup is in powder form, and with the type of covers that I like, it just was not cutting it. That's when I found Araza Beauty's all-in-one coconut cream foundation. This foundation actually improves my skin while providing sun protection and, of course, even coverage. With a dewy finish, almost like a BB cream, it's perfect for everyday wear. Plus, it's packed with ingredients like jojoba oil, probiotics, antioxidants, and zinc oxide, which provides SPF 28 coverage. I also love that Araza Beauty is a woman-owned and dedicated to giving back to victims of domestic violence. I feel great about supporting this company, which makes its super luxurious makeup even more satisfying. Now, I recommend with starting with the foundation. See what I did there, foundation? You won't regret it. Just to make it easier for you, Araza is giving my listeners a special discount of 15% off. So go to arazabeauty.com and use the code EmpoweredBirth at checkout. Yeah. Oh, that was a nobody talked to me about engorgement, by the way, after I first went or the process of milk coming in. That was intense for my first one. It has gotten better with every single one, but is that a normal thing to have happen, like especially for a first-time mom?
I agree. It has gotten better for me with each kid as well, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I know more about efficient milk removal or if it's because there's something. My doula for my first baby kind of just called it like working the kinks out. She was like, your milk ducts have never been used before. They're just getting used to this new job. And I think there might be something to that, as weird as that sounds. So usually between days 3 and 5, you will have some sort of sensation of like, oh, my milk has come in now, you know? And it doesn't have to be painful per se, but usually you're a lot more full, your breasts are a lot bigger. Oftentimes, the day your milk kind of quote unquote comes in is when you're very emotional too. Like those baby blues
Oh
kick
yeah,
in, you're
day
kind of
three.
crying.
Always.
You're just very tearful. You're like, I don't even know why. I don't know why I'm crying. That's probably the day your milk is coming in. That progesterone has totally bottomed out and that prolactin is taking over.
Yeah, that's such a good reminder too. When day three hits, usually milk comes in around 2 to 5 days, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, so it can be 3 to 7 days for a first-time
Oh, three.
mom,
Okay.
and usually like 2 to 3 days for subsequent
Yeah.
babies.
Yeah, I think each time it's been about day three, day two or three for me. And yeah, it's always that hormonal crash that happens. That's so interesting. I never correlated that with milk coming in, though. I always heard of day three is the worst with the hormone crash, but that's so interesting. How many people would you say hire you in that first week? Is that something where maybe people should be more proactive on, or are they, should they wait until they know for sure, like, oh, I have problems, so I should probably call Therese.
Yeah, that's a great question. The people who are most likely to call me in the first 2 weeks are people who got prenatal education from me or from someone else, and they understand that the sooner you get on top of it, the better. A lot of my clients are calling me between 8 and 12 weeks, and they have suffered through this for a long time. And this is kind of their last ditch effort. And that's fine. And I'm glad and I love that. But it is more work on mom's end to come back from that. So, One of the perks of being an IBCLC is that I do take insurance for clients who have insurance. Sometimes that's helpful because having a baby costs money and everything costs money. And so it's one more thing, like, do I really need that? But if you really need it, you really need it. And sooner is better. So I love it when, you know, midwives and doulas have lactation training and they can kind of help the mom know whether this is a normal difficult thing or an abnormal difficult thing and kind of point them in that direction early on.
That is a good point. Yeah, that is. So doulas listening out there, or if you're doula, if you have a doula, that is a very good role. Be like, okay, there is something extra going on here. And it is really important to have some sort of education around breastfeeding because the benefits really outweigh the risk in the end. Like, breastfeeding is so beneficial for that mother-baby bond. Can you talk a little bit about the overall benefits of breastfeeding? I know for me, that was one thing that really kept me going in the hard times, was knowing the benefit. And so one more day was because I knew like that bond was so important in the end. For me, that was really important. But I know there's so many other immune system, so many other benefits. Would you just speak on that for a minute?
Yeah, I love these and I could talk about them forever. We have a whole section in our online course about the benefits of breastfeeding because there are so many. Breast milk is obviously the biologically appropriate milk for a growing human infant. And the initial colostrum, like I said, actually has more of an immune benefit than a nutritional benefit. So colostrum is really rich in immunoglobulin A, IgA, and it coats the intestinal lining to keep things from getting into the baby's system. And it's essentially programming their immune system in their first few days. So because now there's a separate entity from mom and they're in this big wide open world. And so even if a mom only breastfeeds for a week, I'm like, you did so much for your baby's long-term health. And of course we all know that breastfeeding has a lower risk of ear infections, lower risk of childhood cancers, lower risk of GI illnesses. And I think here in the US, we kind of are a little bit insulated from some of those things, but the numbers are substantial. Like something like 800,000 maternal and infant deaths per year could be prevented with exclusive breastfeeding. Yeah,
oh
huge
my gosh,
number.
That is
huge
insane.
Number.
Yes. That's worldwide?
Worldwide, like 800,000.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And moms and babies. So we're talking both. And you know, for the mom, we talked about the suckling causes the cramping down, hopefully decreased bleeding. Moms, the long-term benefit, every year you breastfeed cumulatively between all of your children decreases your risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and some autoimmune diseases are more likely to kick in postpartum regardless, but some you are actually decreasing your long-term risk of things like type 1 diabetes and a few other things by breastfeeding. So it's pretty cool.
I mean, come on. If that yeah. doesn't just encourage you and make you look at the fascinating design, like I just love looking at birth and nursing and all of that. When you look at it, and you see the benefits and you see how it's designed and how it works, it's just your mind is blown. My mind is blown every time I talk about it. And it's so encouraging to me that it was set up so wonderfully and we can really lean into that design so we can trust it. And when it gets to a point where we need a little bit more help, there's wonderful people like you who can come alongside and help us in that journey, which really ultimately matters. But can you talk a little bit about your course? Where can people connect with you? And what are some things that women can benefit from doing that?
Yeah, so prenatal education has really been shown to increase the duration of breastfeeding and mom's kind of satisfaction rates with breastfeeding. And I think that it's so easy to, and this was me again with my first, I learned the hard way. I was so focused on birth because I'd never done that before. Obviously, it's a huge event. We need to plan for this. We need to be prepared. And I really just did not think about what happens at all when I bring the baby home. And all I had was the clinical knowledge of like, let's make sure these boxes are checked. And I guess it means that my baby's eating well. And it was kind of a shock when that wasn't the case. And so I think prenatal breastfeeding education is really important, whether it's an in-person class, whether it's an online class. Part of the benefit is having your partner take that class with you. I think that that is not to be understated. A lot of times, you know, the moms listening to your podcast are very invested in these decisions that they're making that set the trajectory for their family. And it's not that their partner is opposed to it, but if they don't understand the motivation and the drive for making these choices that are against the grain, they're going to say, why don't you just let me give a bottle at night? What, and they're not trying to sabotage your breastfeeding journey, but they're not coming at it from the same angle you're at. So that's a huge perk of breastfeeding education.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Having the support of your partner is so important. And the bottle at night, that I hear that all the time. And that really does. Can you talk about why that is important to kind of be educated about?
Yeah, so a lot of times, I mean, dads, not to overgeneralize, but just want to help, just want a solution to the problem. You're not sleeping, the baby's not gaining weight, you're tired, your nipples hurt. Formula exists. Let me give a bottle of formula. And if you skip a breastfeeding session for any reason, you still need to remove milk. And so otherwise your body's going to think, well, I don't need that much milk, so I'm going to start ramping down my production. So some moms choose to do that. Some moms do. They, for whatever reason, I'm going to breastfeed during the day and somebody else can get bottles at night. And that is a totally valid choice. But what I hate is when somebody is trying to accept and receive help and then they end up digging themselves in a hole that actually isn't helping in the long run. So, your nighttime milk production is very important for milk supply, and that's a whole different discussion, sleep and nighttime breastfeeding. But if a mom really needs long chunks of sleep, because I did, I had a counselor tell me after my third, she was like, you need a 4 hour stretch of sleep, like for your well-being, like minimum baseline functioning, like you are not well, you need more sleep. And which is again a different discussion, but it was a pretty extreme situation. And I can help moms navigate that. We're not saying you have to breastfeed your baby 45 minutes, every 45 minutes, all night for months on end, right? There's something else going on there if that's the case. But we don't want to consistently replace nighttime feedings with a bottle without removing milk at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, totally. And just like any decision, you should be informed about it before making it, right? Like
Yes,
the more
exactly.
educated you are about it, then you are able to make that well-educated, informed decision. And usually that works out much better for you than just going into it without any knowledge. So yeah, if you do choose to not nurse at night, like it is still important to be removing that milk. And I think a lot of moms miss that just because sleep really, you need it to survive. And so I totally understand. And I have had three children that was up probably like every hour, especially my first. And it was absolutely miserable. So I feel you on that. I empathize with that. And sleep is so important. But do you have any last pieces of wisdom on your heart to share? With
And I kind of want to reiterate some kind of what you just said. First of all, an empowered decision is worth everything, right? That's how we kind of obtain this role as mother. Like somebody hands you a baby, it makes you a mother, but also not. It's a continuous process as long as we live. And a lot of the choices that we make about birth and breastfeeding are part of what empowers us to become the kind of mom we're looking to be. And so I have had clients feed an evening bottle and they're like, this is just better for everybody. I'm like, good. Good. That's my goal. I want you to make the decision that feels right for you. And the other thing is, sometimes in this more holistic community, we kind of glaze over problems sometimes too. I see that a lot from this third party outside perspective, kind of watching little Facebook chats go downhill quickly. Yeah, somebody's saying my baby's nursing every 45 minutes throughout the night. And you're going to get people say, well, just co-sleep. Just, it's normal. That's normal. Or, drink, take these magical pills to increase your supply. Or, and nobody's saying every 45 minutes for like weeks on end is not normal. And you need to see somebody about that. And so, obviously, if you're posting that on Facebook, you know in your gut that there's something going on. And so, I would encourage you to take that to an individual person and not just a holistic community as a whole, because it's just funny. It's
Well, and
just
it's
funny to see where those
overwhelming.
conversations go. It's totally overwhelming.
Yeah, you
You're
don't
like, is
know
this
who to
normal
listen
or is this
to.
not?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's a lot. It's a lot for mom to process. And then you're sleep deprived and you don't know who to listen to. And you can spiral so fast when you're in that position. You think your baby's not getting enough milk and you're like, oh gosh, I feel so deeply for these postpartum moms, probably because I'm so in the thick of it still. But do you have any encouragement or last words for moms out there?
Yeah, just go with your gut. And if your provider is dismissing that, find a different provider. I know you talk about that a lot, but you're probably not making skim milk. You're probably not, if you suspect something is going on, you don't have to know what it is. You don't have to become a breastfeeding expert to breastfeed, but you do have to listen to your mom gut and say something is not right here, and I need to find somebody who's taking you seriously and willing to dig into it.
Yeah, so important. You are empowered mamas out there. You definitely are. And our instincts, intuition, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, is so powerful. So lean in and listen to that. I love that piece of wisdom. Thank you so much, Teresa. Where can people find you, connect with you?
So I'm on Instagram at happy.mama.healthy.baby, and my website is happymamahealthybaby.co for people who are maybe local. If you want in-person lactation support, I do take some insurances, and it would be free to you if you have insurance. Otherwise, obviously, I have a cash pay system, and I have an online breastfeeding course, and that can be found. I'll send you a link to put in your profile.
Yeah, I'll
And
put all these in the show notes.
I'll send you a little discount code as well.
Okay.
And then I have a podcast called Milk and Motherhood, and we talk about postpartum and breastfeeding and all those good things. So that's where you can find me.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. I so appreciate this conversation. It really does matter from birth on. I want all of these moms to feel the empowerment that they really do have. So I appreciate you so much. You have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, Ellie. You too.
I hope you loved today's episode and found it so helpful and encouraging. If you did, would you take 30 seconds to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend who has been praying for a peaceful home birth? Lastly, make sure you get my free download of my complete home birth essentials checklist. Make sure you have everything ready to go so you're able to feel at peace and confidence leading into your home birth. This printable checklist has all of the important but less glamorous or thought of items that I have found to be so incredibly helpful to have at a home birth after working with many clients in person. Now, get it by clicking the link in the show notes. And as always, thanks for listening and peace be with you.